Today, how COVID shone a light on the conditions inside the British factories supplying online retail giant Boohoo.
The city of Leicester, with its 340,000 inhabitants, will not be allowed to ease lockdown restrictions on July the 4th, unlike the rest of England.
We started reporting on the story after the news came out that Leicester was going to become the first place in the country to have a second lockdown. And I went there, I guess, thinking first and foremost that the story I was going to do that day was about the impact on the residents and talk to people about how upsetting it was to know that whereas the rest of the country would be going back to normal, everybody in Leicester would be sticking as they were. And I got there and I spent a bit of time in the centre of town, you know, just sort of a completely typical British high street, and talking to people about the consequences and to people who are shielding and all of these things. And I went to this area of North Evington, which I was told was at the centre of the new outbreak. And I started talking to people in shops there.
I'm a journalist. I'm writing about...
Talking to a florist and a guy who ran a carpet shop.
It's going to feel like we're back to square one.
Yeah.
But one of the community organisers who I spoke to in the area said that one of the issues that they were aware of was about not how people were going to react to the new lockdown, but what led to it happening. And she told me that what I ought to do is go to Leicester's garment district, to where the factories are.
So that's what The Guardian's senior reporter, Archie Bland, did, walking just a few minutes to the streets around St Saviour's Road, where many of the city's factories are based. This is a story about a pandemic, workers' rights, and the disposable way in which many of us live our lives. The conditions inside the UK factories that produce fast fashion have been an open secret in Leicester for years. But it's taken a localised spike in COVID, pushing the city into a longer lockdown, to realise just how bad the situation has become.
And as soon as you get into that area, something doesn't feel quite right. The word Dickensian is used a lot, and it didn't seem out of place. It was dilapidated, there are smashed windows, doesn't feel like there's a lot of fire safety. A lot of the windows are covered so that you can't see in. And one of the things that emerged from talking to people over the following days was that while there may have been many reasons for COVID returning in Leicester, one significant factor may have been the cramped conditions in garment factories and the fact that people were asked to continue to go to work there even when the crisis began. And asking around and researching over the next few days, I learned that Leicester's garment industry is really heavily devoted to fast fashion, and 75% of the clothes that are made in the city go towards one company, which is Boohoo. I think this week in Leicester was probably one of the most shocking stories I've ever worked on in my life.
The factories are run by suppliers based in the city, but they are thought to sell most of their products to one major online retailer, Boohoo, which is now facing an intense backlash. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, how COVID shone a light on poor conditions inside Britain's fast fashion factories. So Archie, the story had brought you to these garment factories in this one neighbourhood of Leicester. And the factories are run by suppliers, but as you said, most of the clothes they were making were headed to this one company, Boohoo. What did you know about the company?
To be honest, most of my knowledge of Boohoo at that point was gleaned from watching Love Island. My knowledge didn't go very far beyond the fact that they and other fast fashion companies buy ads endlessly during those shows, try and get the people who are on them to wear their clothes afterwards to sell them to the young women who are the predominant part of their market. I knew that Boohoo is a fast fashion company and that it's in a market with competitors like ASOS and Missguided, and that they famously sell clothes really cheaply, and probably like quite a lot of people, you kind of smell that something isn't quite right about that, even if you don't know as much about it as you should. And I had read coverage of the issue before, and it was sort of at the back of my mind, but it wasn't at the front of it. And when I was told that it was worth looking at the ways that fast fashion companies operate and the relationships that companies like Boohoo have with their suppliers, I went back to my laptop and I started reading back on some of this stuff that was vaguely familiar from before.
The answer is that basically in a huge chunk of Leicester's garment industry, labour law does not apply. It is, as one factory owner put it to me, it's a country within a country.
So when I started looking into Boohoo with a bit more care, I started to find out quite how huge they are. They're really the biggest of the fast fashion companies, and that's partly because of the speed that they get close to market. They own other brands like Pretty Little Thing and Nasty Gal and Karen Millen, and they're a huge retail success story.
Do you know how they got so big and how they ended up being so dominant in Leicester?
So they really surfed the same wave as their rivals, which was clocking that there was a big market for people who wanted to buy essentially disposable clothes so they could buy lots of things, try them on, and if it didn't work out, it didn't matter, there'd be another one along in a minute. But really the thing that is at the centre of Boohoo's success is the incredible speed with which it gets the clothes into the market. It does that faster than any of its rivals. And the way that it manages that is by having a UK-based manufacturing base. And Boohoo's manufacturing base is predominantly in the UK, in Leicester.
And do we know how disruptive COVID was to their success?
Well, not as disruptive as you might have imagined. For lots of businesses, COVID-19 was obviously a huge difficulty. And obviously, it's very difficult to have a properly socially distanced factory. And so you might imagine that with companies like Boohoo desperately trying to do things quickly and the fact that they need to respond quickly to changes in trends so that their audience is seeing the stuff that they want online, that it would be a big problem. But one of the remarkable things about the coronavirus crisis for Boohoo is that actually it made a year-on-year increase in profits. What they managed to do really well was pivot at astonishing speed from bikinis and going out clothes to what they called loungewear.
Hi everyone. If you want to treat yourself, you can treat yourself and make yourself feel good while still being inside and not breaking the bank. So that is why Boohoo is the first tool of my new little loungewear series that I'm going to be doing.
Pajamas and sweatpants and all that kind of stuff that you wear when you're around the house. And if you sort of follow their Twitter feed over this period, you can really see that they very rapidly start selling to their customers just the kind of clothes that you want when you're around the house. What that means is that they essentially managed, because they wouldn't have had this stuff in stock, because no one saw this coming, to pivot very quickly from one set of production to another. And what that meant is that despite the coronavirus crisis, they were basically able to keep manufacturing at the same rate as before. And they really prided themselves when they were talking to fashion industry publications on that success, on that ability to change quickly from one thing to another. They were full of praise for the flexibility of their manufacturing base.
They were able to take advantage of the pandemic, basically.
We're all in this together, and we'll all come out of this together. Love, Boohoo.
Yeah. You know, they saw an opportunity in the market and they jumped on it.
But practically speaking, were the factories that were supplying them allowed to stay open during lockdown?
So it was clear throughout coronavirus that the government was keen that not everything grind completely to a halt. And it is important to say that with adequate social distancing in place, lots of workplaces were expected to stay open. And there's no reason that the suppliers for Boohoo, we should say that they are their suppliers rather than businesses run by Boohoo itself. There's no reason that they should have been able to do that. But the question wasn't whether they were allowed to stay open at all. The question was whether the suppliers for Boohoo could produce the number of clothes that they needed to whilst respecting social distancing.
So were you able to find out about those conditions inside the factories during the lockdown?
Well, it's extremely difficult to get into factories in Leicester. But as I began to do this reporting, I was put in touch with a group called Labour Behind the Label and a woman called Dominique Muller, who works there and was just in the middle of finishing a report about the state of coronavirus in Leicester and about whether factories there might have contributed to the problem.
Hello. Hi, it's Archie here at The Guardian.
So I gave Dominique a call and she told me about their report.
I think it's really exacerbated that the nature of the industry there, you know, the fact that people are being paid far less than minimum wage anyway, they're on dodgy contracts.
And she told me about the evidence she'd seen that there were suppliers in Leicester who were asking lots of people to continue to work even when they had coronavirus, who weren't keeping people far enough apart to avoid the risk of spreading the virus. And she described a situation which, honestly, I think would shock anyone who was paying close attention to how the country responded to coronavirus, because even as everybody else in the country was trying really hard to do everything they could to limit the spread of the virus, it seemed like these factories in Leicester were doing the opposite.
Like what? What did she find out?
So Dominique, through her sources in the town and through talking to workers directly, got all sorts of details about the ways that companies simply continued, almost, in some cases, almost literally without stopping, but in many cases, only stopping for 2-3 days when lockdown hit before carrying on just as before. And she found that there were people who were asked to continue going to work even when they had coronavirus. People were told that if they didn't come into work because they were afraid of catching it, because there were various people in their factory who had the disease, that they wouldn't be paid. She found claims of furlough fraud where the company takes the furlough money, but it doesn't hand it on to the worker. She found basically a comprehensive picture of factories that were more concerned with the bottom line than they were with the health of their workers.
And who are the people who are working in these factories? What do we know about them?
So we know that the people who are working in Leicester's factories are amongst the most vulnerable in the country. They are often people who don't speak English very well. In some cases, they might be undocumented. In other cases, they might be in the situation where they're afraid of their bosses, where they have almost no resources at all. And they really are the picture of the vulnerable worker who is at the mercy of their employers and who have very little choice but to do what they're told. And it's worth pointing out when we talk about this that Leicester's been a manufacturing city for centuries. And in the 19th and mid-20th century, it was sort of well known for being a base of quality manufacturing.
This is Leicester, known before the Romans came, more prosperous today than ever before. For the city today is one of Britain's most important industrial centres.
And for being a city where people were pretty well paid, you know, the slogan was Leicester clothes the world. But then in the 60s and 70s, there was this huge increase of immigration into Leicester, people mostly from India and Uganda. And with this big new workforce that was willing to be paid less money, that meant that salaries dropped. Regulations and conditions in factories became less solid than they were before. And then even a decade ago looks pretty positive by comparison to lots of people working in Leicester today. They say that when they started out, that the factories were often working for big, well-known high street brands like Primark and Marks and Spencers. And then it was the arrival of the fast fashion brands that changed everything.
And obviously you've told us where the majority of these clothes end up in terms of the big brands, in terms of Boohoo. Do we know who the actual suppliers are?
Well, we do in the sense that it's 75% of clothing made in the city. So to some extent, take your pick. A very, very high proportion of the companies there are working for Boohoo. But at the same time, we don't know exactly. A lot of these companies won't let anybody in. It's very difficult to find out exactly how Boohoo's supply chain operates. And actually, a lot of the time, it isn't even the first-hand suppliers to Boohoo and their rivals who are the problem. It's the people who they subcontract to who really very little is known about at all.
So it's a very opaque system.
It really is opaque. You know, I was in Leicester for a few days, and a lot of the time when I knocked on doors or rang doorbells...
Hello?
Hi there, sorry to bother you. The people on the other end of the intercom weren't that keen to talk to me.
Well, the boss is not here at the moment.
They would often say that there were no problems here and they hadn't heard about any problems anywhere else, but they were too busy to have a conversation that day. And so I would move on to the next place and try again.
Hello?
So did you get any breakthroughs?
Well, there are people who want to talk about the garment business in Leicester. And quite a lot of the time, they're the ones who are doing things the right way. There was one factory that I went to where it was a very long walk through quite a big car park to get there. I felt quite nervous as I was going up to the door because quite often people aren't that pleased to see you. And I met Usman Kabari and his son Mohammed.
Yes,
hi there. I'm a journalist at The Guardian.
And they weren't overjoyed about the attention. They said they'd already read too much in The Guardian and they'd had enough of these stories. But then they started to tell me about the way that they work. And really what they described was a model of how you ought to handle something like the coronavirus crisis. And in general, their business seems like a model of how a supplier to fast fashion industries ought to work.
Which is how? What were they doing?
So they took me on a tour. They didn't know I was coming, so it did feel like what they call an unannounced inspection. And they showed me that their family factory is well spaced out.
Yeah, it's not packed with people, yeah. Certainly.
They didn't have too many workers in place. They had foot-operated hand sanitizer pumps, which were provided by Misguided, the company that buys from them. And it felt as if they were doing everything they could to protect their workers, but still keep their business viable.
And were they able to tell you anything about Boohoo? Had they ever been approached by them?
They had been approached by them. And the question that people like Mohammed and Usman ask is, when so little money is sometimes paid for these clothes, how can it be possible to make them within the rules?
Okay, and if we just step back from Boohoo for a moment and focus on the suppliers that they and other companies are using, the ones that are making clothes in these factories with the poor conditions, the ones that were not opening the door to you, were you able to find out what was happening inside them?
Well, a little bit, yeah. And it's taken a while, but after my initial article appeared, I got a call from a withheld number from somebody who wouldn't initially give me their name, didn't want to tell me anything specifically about the place that they worked. But gradually, as they spoke, they presented a picture of something really shocking going on in Leicester. They talked about factories where workers have been locked in, have been working overnight from 7 till 7 to avoid attention from people who they'd rather didn't see what was going on. They've talked about factory floors with rats all over the place. They've talked about toilets without any soap in them, much less hand sanitizer dispensers. They've talked about busy factories with people really close together in them. And they've talked about broader problems too, because it's really important to say that this isn't just about coronavirus. This person was telling me about the factory that they work in, where a large group of immigrant labourers who are in there are living in accommodation owned by the factory owner, and they pay that person rent, and it's far beyond what they can afford. The picture that this person presented to me was one really of despair. They said that they called me because they didn't really know what else to do and they wanted something to change. And they said that they were getting by with a family of four on about £8,000 a year.
Wow, that's incredible. And that's here in the UK in 2020.
All week I had this kind of naive astonishment that this was happening at all. And a lot of people I was talking to, that was my question to them, was how can this be happening in Britain?
And actually, a lot of this stuff isn't new. You know, there have been investigations into the garment industry in Leicester before, but what has happened is that the light has been shone on it as a result of COVID. Can we say for sure that the conditions in these factories is linked to that increase in the infection rate in Leicester?
So, as is usually the case with this kind of thing, the answer is it's very difficult to be precise. There are lots of different things that may have contributed to the spread of coronavirus in Leicester. There were food factories outside of town. There is the fact that there are quite a few multi-occupancy households with lots of different people living in pretty cramped accommodation. There's the fact that there's a large Gujarati community, some of whom don't speak English particularly well and who may not be getting the public information that's being put out and that might be very obvious to you if you're watching the Prime Minister's press conference at 5 o'clock, but isn't so obvious if you don't have a smartphone. And then there's the lack of data sharing, which is a big problem highlighted by local public health officials. But what is clear is that North Evington, where the garment district is at the centre of this outbreak. And the conditions in these factories were absolutely perfect to allow for the spread of coronavirus. We can't definitively pin it to one thing, but I think we can definitely say that it was a factor.
Coming up, how has the country reacted to these shocking revelations? Almost regardless of whether there's a definite link or not on the COVID front, this has clearly lifted the lid once again on terrible working conditions here in the UK. What has the reaction been?
Well, I think the reaction has been, to some extent, one of a bit of national shame that this isn't something we knew more about. And lots of people have leapt to say that they will investigate.
Yes, I'm very worried about some of the employment practices in some of the factories in Leicester. We've got
and there's been a lot of public outrage. You've had the health and safety executive, local police, the gangmasters authority, Priti Patel, politicians everywhere from Liz Kendall to Andrew Bridgen, who's actually been talking about this for a while.
Would the minister agree for a meeting with me to discuss the situation in Leicester, where I believe there are approximately 10,000 people in the clothing industry being paid £3 to £4 an hour in conditions of modern slavery?
Saying that it's a huge problem and that these concerns need to be addressed, but one of the big worries will be that essentially these factories will go dark for a few weeks, and then when the spotlight has moved on to something else, they will start up again just as they were before. And even though coronavirus isn't an issue anymore, the huge human rights issues which are present in Leicester will be just as severe as they were before.
And what about Boohoo themselves?
So initially when we went to Boohoo, they were pretty adamant that there were no problems. They were very pleased about that, and that their audit process, which had been remote rather than up close during the coronavirus period, had continued to work well. As concerns continued to grow and they faced more concerns that factories that they bought from were amongst the ones that didn't have adequate measures in place, they said that they would investigate. And then over the weekend, the Sunday Times found a specific factory where workers were being paid below minimum wage to make clothing that was destined for Boohoo-owned brands. And the company said it would investigate that.
Fast fashion brand Boohoo saw its share price plummet yesterday after reports staff working for one of its suppliers were being underpaid and in unsafe working conditions. The allegations.
Those are really serious claims, although I should say that some of them appear to be disputed. But either way, this has turned into a really difficult week for Boohoo, hasn't it?
Since then, things have moved extremely fast. And you would have to say it has, yes, been an extremely tough week for Boohoo. It lost about $1.5 billion from its market value off its share price in 2 days, which is about a third of its total worth, which is pretty remarkable. A string then of big online retailers, including ASOS and Next, all dropped it and said that they would no longer sell its clothes pending the outcome of any investigation. The company was then led to announce an independent QC-led review of its processes and of what's going on in Leicester, partly, I think, because of the pressure of criticism. And what will be interesting to see now is whether the pressure that has been brought to bear on influencers to stop wearing its clothes, to stop the endorsement deals, which are worth quite a lot of money for someone who's just been on Love Island, is effective as a means of severing Boohoo's ties to the young people who are its most crucial customer base.
I guess the bigger question then is about society. As you've told us, Boohoo, like many other brands, has grown hugely because people are attracted to fast fashion, fashion that is both affordable and quick. Is the only way to avoid this a much bigger rethink about the way in which we consume goods?
I think that's right. And I think it's worth saying that the young people who typically buy clothes from these companies really do care about these issues. It's completely understandable why people want to buy this stuff. It's great to have that choice and to be able to buy things, and if they don't work, to switch them up for something else and to feel like you're renewing what you have all the time. And also you have to look at the other end of the market and some of the completely unrealistic kind of fashion offers that are there for younger people. And you can understand what leads them in that direction. But I suppose ultimately we're going to have to reach a point collectively where we conclude that actually fewer things and paying a little bit more for them is necessary if we're going to have a market for clothes that doesn't ultimately rely on other people's suffering.
Archie Bland, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Archie Bland, who has been writing all about this. Do go to theguardian.com to read his stories. And I will tweet them out, so do follow me at Anushka Astana. Boohoo has launched an independent review into its UK supply chain after allegations that some factories were paying below minimum wage and had failed to protect workers from the COVID outbreak. It said the company named in this weekend's Sunday Times report was not and never had been a supplier, and it said that to date it had not found any evidence of suppliers paying workers £3.50 an hour or less than the current legal minimum wage of £8.72 for those over 25. However, Boohoo said it had found evidence that two suppliers had failed to comply with its code of conduct, and Boohoo has terminated its relationships with both of those firms. The company said in a statement that the board was shocked and appalled by the recent allegations and was committed to working to rebuild its reputation of textile manufacturing in Leicester. That's it for today.
My thanks to Archie Bland and to you for listening. We've had some really interesting feedback on Twitter and through reviews, so do keep them coming. This episode was produced by Sam Colbert. Sound design was by Axel Cucoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.